we've done opening cans now? Yes.
Yep. Open the whole six-pack of beer here, yep.
Jeez. We have quality standards to try to destroy film, but we generally wait till we're at least live before we do film.
That's a one after 6 years.
That was the idea.
Wait,
I was trying to beat the countdown here, because that way, otherwise I'd have to mute.
Welcome to our Polycast Christmas special. I'm Monica Lua, and with me today, as usual, is Dan.
Dear Santa, define naughty.
Lisa?
If you give me coal, I'll gladly take it.
Oh, especially if it's in-game. And, of course, Phil.
All kinds of things in Civ could be considered toys.
Well, Civ itself is considered a toy, so there you go.
Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
QNL.
All of the questions or inquiries or comments that you are going to be hearing about today come from you, members of our audience.
So, we're going to start off with an easy email from Norma Buck. Hey guys, I've got a question on how one's choice of bean seed in Civilization V affects how the game eventually pans out. Specifically, are particular victory conditions, perhaps domination or science, easier to pursue than normal with quicker or slower game speed? Are particular abilities better choices because of their unique abilities and their unique units, and are particular units better built in Marathon compared to quick speed? He's basically asking how game mechanics scale with game speed in Civilization V. Well, I actually wouldn't be the one to answer this question because I don't really play other game speeds besides normal. But Marathon, I feel like a Marathon would help a little bit on the production front, even though it's more turns total to get to build whatever you're building. Everything takes a bunch more turns. So that's one thing that I have an inkling of. Like, I think it's a little bit easier, at least, to achieve a production-based victory, like spaceship victory, on Marathon. I'm not sure whether game speed would really influence, the other victory conditions that much, especially, the military-based ones. But I'm curious to see what you guys have to say about it.
You kidding me? Marathon is by far the easiest speed to pursue any type of military strategy. And that's not just for Civ 5, but for any Civ imaginable. Because you have a scaled production cost, but once those units are on the field, they're essentially moving multiple times the speed of what they would be on normal speed, and that's multiple times the speed relative to the tech pace, it's multiple speed compared to the rate that additional units can be trained, multiple times speed in general. So pretty much any time you're looking at a military strategy, you have multiple times the speed to multiple times the amount of time, the amount of turns, the amount of moves to heal, to attack, to kill things, and push further into AI or other human territory than you do at a normal speed. And chances that your units will go absolutely mid-war are virtually nil as a result. And the chances that they're going to be able to reproduce any material army before you roll them after destroying their first army, again, much reduced in Marathon. For Hall of Fame purposes, just about every victory condition gets into earlier finish on Marathon compared to other speeds. And the reason for that is you know, you get this kind of ball rolling downhill effect in civilization games, such that your early inputs, the stronger you are in the early game, the bigger it translates to your end game. So when you have a worker moving onto a tile and then improving it, the improvement scale, the movement to that tile or hex, that didn't scale. So you're spending less of your time moving, so your tile improvement's set earlier relative to that. And then you just have some rounding things as well. Usually when push comes to shove, then, you know, settler, traveling, everything. Marathon has an advantage in most ways when it comes to finish date. Now, if you're looking for a strictly peaceful victory, then faster speeds are probably quote-unquote easier, despite that you'll finish later. So that's something to bear in mind. Because, again, it works in reverse.
And your units do not become obsolete quite so fast. So you usually have a chance to build out and use your other things like riflemen or musketeers before suddenly, oops, there's another technology.
Imagine comments, and I didn't think of this offhand, but he comments in the chat here that great scientists are more powerful on Marathon. One tech is one tech. Well, techs cost more total beakers, but all techs cost more beakers in Marathon. So I don't know that the scientist is stronger in particular in Marathon, except that it would allow you to milk military advantages for longer. And in that, from that perspective, they're amazing. Absolutely amazing.
I have nothing to add other than Flutes, you know, with thanks, Seeps, for the great podcast, and keep on simming. You're welcome, and done.
So I guess we'll just go to the next email then, which is from Jason in quotes. I don't know, a sin on Christmas. I don't know if I like this theme. Yeah, actually I do. You will get the coal. You will definitely get the coal. And Jason Hermson. And this one's fairly long, so I'm going to try and take it line item by line item, I suppose. Starting with the top, I enjoy the podcast, but I really only listen to Dan Q and the Mean Team, you know, because I can't hear the girls or guest hosts.
Can't hear me either.
Yeah, they can't hear you either, Jason. Wait, what?
What? Are we reading an email? What?
Anyway, he says, I listen with an iPod at work or in a warehouse. Dan and Philip have most contributed to strategy related questions, which is why I listen to most. Anyway, some questions. What strategy do you think is most like Civilization that is not a Sid Meier game? I'm going to stop there, and maybe you guys have something to say about this, because I can't think of a lot that are quote-unquote like Civilization.
Yeah, Civ is kind of unique in its approach. I mean, the only closest thing I could say would be Alpha Centauri, which is from Firaxis, but older. And he said he tried Europa Universalis, but nah, that's not like Civ. I mean, other than it involves countries and a little bit of history occasionally, and no.
The one that, like, everybody talks about is Age of Empires, although the mechanics are not the same at all, and it's not really...
No, it's more RTS.
Real time.
Yeah.
It is RTS.
Yes.
I don't know. I really can't think of, that many. I mean, I can think of, you know, games with the same theme, but, you know, just none of them really have the same mechanic, I guess. The only thing that comes to mind is, like, this game that I used to play when I was, like, 12 or something in school, where you get to, like, build an empire, but it had to be Egypt. Like, that was the only city you could play. And that was supposed to teach us something, but I don't remember what it was. I don't even remember the game.
It wasn't Pharaoh, was it?
Yeah, Pharaoh, yeah.
That's
kind of like this.
That is, yeah, because you're instead of managing a whole civilization, you're just managing particular cities as you're going through Egyptian history and building monuments and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of real-time-ish, but it's a city-building type of thing, like the Caesar games, as opposed to the more turn-based strategy thing. I mean, you do have to build armies, and you go to war, but you don't actually see the fighting or anything, and you can't control it as much.
Yeah.
You know, when I saw this question, especially when it says, you know, most like Civilization, it's not a Sid Meier game, I mean, first I would think of, oh, it's not Sid, Alpha Centauri. Oh, no, wait, yeah, Sid Meier's on there. Already mentioned Age of Empires. I actually also thought of Rise of Nations from Big Huge Games, but that is also real time.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're talking about something that is most like Civilization, not a Sid Meier game, I'm going to say Galactic Civilizations, and I'm going to say Galactic Civilizations 2 Dreadlords from Stardock, which had a couple of expansions, Dark Avatar in 2007 and Twilight of the Arnor in 2008. Now, that is space-based, but I think that's as close as you're going to get to your 4X strategy-style game that we have in Civ, and that is also turn-based.
I would like to point out, too, that just because it's not exactly like Civilization doesn't mean it won't be a good game. I know it's a bit of a blasphemy to say things like that on a Civ-based show, I suppose. But for example, Genghis Khan 2, I ran a Let's Play on that. That was a fun game in its own right, and there's certainly a lot of value to it even today, despite that it's very old now. And you can look at anything in the turn-based strategy genre, even things that are very, very different from Civ, like Final Fantasy Tactics. No one would ever confuse that as anything near Civ. Yeah, it can be fun, and there's some strategic depth there. So, I don't know. It's hard for me to recommend anything that's particularly like Civ. And I think that's the reason a lot of us are drawn to it. It's just that it's fairly unique in that regard. I don't know. Does anyone have anything to add, or should I continue with the email?
Although I haven't played it in a long time, there's Free Civ.
Oh, yeah, that is...
That's true. Is that a Sid Meier title? I don't think
no,
it is.
No. It's, it's freeware. It's community developed based on Civilization 2, I believe. Commercial. We're going to be blogging about quote-unquote commercial titles, even though the email didn't say that. That's what my mind first went to. All I can think of is Galciv, and even then that's... problematic. That's a very difficult question. He was trying to trip us up, I think. But I think we managed to stumble a little bit, but not fall completely on our faces, so we can continue.
Excellent. All right. Jason continues. With several civilizations across genres, into city building simulation, Facebook game, like Warcraft games from strategy to MMORPG with World of Warcraft, Might and Magic from RGP to quasi-strat with Heroes of Might and Magic, which is one of the best turn-based strategy, by the way. A strategy game you can talk about on podcasts. Could Civilization do well in another genre, like an RPG country building sim, a la Tropico or some other? No, it would be difficult to make a good game like that. I mean, like, certainly, if you really, really designed a game that was fun to play at the core and then threw a, say, like, a historic theme onto it, it could be a lot of fun. But that would be an uphill battle. Essentially, you'd have to create a game that's really, really strong gameplay-wise so that people love playing it. And but they wouldn't. There was no like brand recognition there, so you have to build that from the start as well. Certainly, game companies manage this all the time, and you get new titles that's from in worlds you've never heard of that are great, but it wouldn't be easy to do it. In an RPG, I don't know. The picture of Montezuma leveling up just kind of scares me a little, but that's just me. And maybe he gets more feathers or something like that.
Well, I don't know if I have a lot of faith that it'll... I don't know, actually turn into a simulation Facebook game or something. I mean, because we've already tried, they mentioned Civ World in this question, but, I mean, I'm of the opinion that that's not that great of a game to begin with. I mean, I guess it could do well, I just don't think it would. I think I'd say it's possible, just not likely.
I don't know, can I change the question slightly and say from the April Fool's joke from last year, could we get Civilization V Extreme Diplomacy?
Oh, jeez.
I definitely believe that for like a couple of days. Like, it was pretty sad. I was like, what? Is it a joke, guys? Oh, I get it now.
I wanted to see Genghis versus Montezuma. Come on.
Finish him.
Well, like Otis Tsunami Train Attack or George Washington's Uncle Slam Attack. I mean, come on, you just gotta love that game. Come on, it's the new I'm on a Boat. Come on now.
Yes. There you go. We'll make that for real. Much like the Blizzard game started out with the panda people being fake, but that didn't stay, did it? No.
Nope.
Anyway.
Nope.
Continuing on, the Civ series has changed dramatically from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5, with Mustang Thorne Johnson made the best with 4. If 6 came out, what programmer from another game series do you think would do the best job of creating a Civ game? This is interesting, because I'm sure we'll all have differing opinions here. But for me, the thing that has plagued this series for multiple iterations now has been how the game runs on systems that are designed, you know, in the same era that the game is released, you should say.
Yeah.
Spending 30 seconds to a minute on turns for a machine that's above recommended specs, that's not fun. And then the user interface. So in other words, I want to see somebody who gets the basics right before going into the other things. But you still need the great gameplay depth that Civ is known for. So I don't know if you could pick just one guy. I mean, clearly, as great as Civ 4 was, Soren did not have the oversight on the people and user interface required to avoid situations where shift-clicking a unit, which would ordinarily select additional unit, now does nothing because you've selected a group of units just previously. You know, so, I don't know. I often joke to the Saturday group that what Civ would be like if it were made by Blizzard or something. So that would be amusing. And just for the sake of being amusing, I will say that Bill Roper, before he left Blizzard, or somebody like that, could do it.
But,
as Magic points out in the chat, that the question is a bit flawed in the sense that what programmer from another game series do you think would be to do the best job of creating a Civ game? Why don't we just even say just designer as opposed to programmer, which a designer could have a programming background or maybe not.
No, no, wait a minute. Programmer is excellent. That should be what we're focusing on. My answer is that we really want a good programmer.
Because
a good programmer would avoid the really long turn times and would avoid a lot of these bugs and glitches that mar the game. Like when you switch a social policy and then switch back, like between Liberty and whatever else, you get more free people. No. That kind of stuff, if you if you're doing it well, you could catch in while you're writing the code. Or if you're making the code cleanly, you're not going to have piece trees that don't scale with game speed. And I don't know if that's still a problem in Civ 5, but it certainly was in Civilization 4. So even if Soren wasn't the one doing the programming physically, whoever was, I mean, they could have used somebody who did things by the book to enough an extent there wasn't major errors, and then just cleaning up the code in general, because it's, I don't know.
Well, I mean, now, game development isn't just one person anyway, but the person who is the designer or who is the lead could have a programming background, and I agree that that could help with issues like this. So when I looked at this question, I just thought, okay, let's choose one person that we would like to see lead the development of the Civilization VI. And from another company, but I actually thought about people from other companies that would do the best to be able to not only lead, but to also to be able to, so once the team was assembled, to actually coordinate, know who to put in charge of what things, have enough of an overview themselves to be able to be of assistance to, you know, different division leaders, you know, graphics, programming, etc. We'll treat this as a quote-unquote, as a bit of a vacuum, kind of like we did on episode 136. We looked at ranking civilizations just based on unique abilities. Well, there's also, hey, there could be unique units and or unique buildings too. So just like when it comes to game design, let's just talk about game designer. So, okay, we've got Bill Roper, there's one.
One person that I would bring up, well, I wish that Soren would come back, but no, okay, if it weren't Soren, I would have to go with, like, maybe it's just because I like The Sims, but maybe Will Wright. I know that it would be nothing, you know, I mean, that's not the kind of game that he makes, really, but I like him.
You know what? Of those still alive, I actually had Will Wright at the top of my list. You know, I forgive the trespass that was The Sims, and I forgot before already. Focus on SimCity, like Lisa, and he would be at the top of my list of those still alive. I'm sorry, who were Seville again, James, or Jason, excuse me. I couldn't just choose one person, but she didn't say I had to choose just one, so I did come up with a little list. He was at the top of my list, because I like making lists, as you may know. if not Will Wright, then I would also say Chris Sawyer, who did Transport Tycoon, or even going a little even more extreme now in terms of this isn't the type of game that they design, Roberta Williams, who did King's Quest, although in an interview 5 years ago, she said that she was fired from the industry, so I guess that's not an option anymore.
Really? Really, Dan? Do you want us to have King's Quest where if you forget one thing or miss one thing in the beginning of the game, you're totally hosed? Come on.
That does kind of happen already, so I guess.
So you're saying it fits.
Yeah.
Oh, not all these quests were like that. Come on now.
Just most of them.
I'm focusing on those that were not like that.
Oh man, King's Quest and Space Quest are amazing.
amazing for screwing you over.
Guided, dang it. Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Guided. Their example of guide, dang it.
But like, no, they're not around anymore, but I really liked the Warlords series by the Strategic Studies Group before they were picked up by a different designer. So, 1, 2, and 3. That game is an excellent, oh, by the way, if you're going for a turn-based strategy, although it's old, Warlords 3 was really fun, so I would suggest looking into that as well. You can probably get it from like Good Old Games or some other similar site for pretty cheap these days, so, worth looking into that. But someone like that, too, because they really knew strategic balance. So that's worth looking at, I suppose, when it comes to developing a new Civ game. Is that Civ could use a little balance as well. I'm just saying. I mean, sometimes it's fun to mop the world with a broken unit, but, yeah, sometimes it's some shit balance, too.
What about you, Maggie?
Well, you know, he did Populous years ago. What if he let Peter Molyneux take a hold of it for a while?
Ooh.
I mean, we might end up with something more fable-ish, but...
Populous. Yeah. I remember that game.
I mean, the Civ is already called a god game as it is. This is just really putting the god in god game. I will smite you little heathens.
Volcano is no longer a random event. No.
Volcano is a purposeful event.
Act in your capital.
That's a nice capital you have there. It'd be a shame if anything happened to it. Volcano.
I always hated those the most. They put rocks everywhere, too. Made me sad.
When I actually thought about designers, the first person that came to mind is actually someone that is sadly no longer with us, someone who influenced Civilization, including Sid Meier, and they may very well have been the designer on the original Civ if they hadn't, from what I read anyway, turned it down or decided had not gone down a different path, and that would be the woman who designed the Seven Cities of Gold. Daniel Booten, who fortunately died at 49 in 1998 due to lung cancer. I absolutely love the Seven Cities of Gold. I know that it wasn't turn-based as we would think of it as turn-based, but I think she would have done an excellent job as she had the chance to continue to design. And even if you've never heard of her before, you don't know who I'm talking about or the Seven Cities of Gold, and if you don't know the Seven Cities of Gold, shame of you. But I do like this quote from her that I try to remember when we all try to get that balance between this real-life thing that we try to pretend doesn't exist and gameplay, which is at one point she said, no one has ever said on their deathbed, gee, I wish I had spent more time alone with my computer.
It's true. One more turn, clomp.
So, continue with Jason's email. His next question is, could a Civ game slash mod be made where war was the least easy option and still be fun? And my answer to that is that every Civilization game I've played, war is the hardest option. So, at least if you're talking a single player scenario. Because if you can win Conquest, you can win anything else, and that's that. But you can often win other things when you can't win with military. So, I would say that war is the most difficult option in any Civ game that I've played or seen, or even any Civ-styled game. It's just, it's hard to attack somebody who's competent.
If you're trying for a peaceful game and want to avoid having to engage in that, either feel like you have to go on the offensive, or you have to find yourself on the defensive, or even, you know, a defensive offense, if it's Civ 4 or Civ 5, I can't remember if it's in Civ 3 or not, you could just check always peace. I know it's not the same, but...
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I just look at it from that perspective. If you can win Conquest, you can basically win anything if you're capable of wiping everyone out. And so by default, that makes it the hardest thing to win.
Although Civ 5 made it a little, well, Civ 5 potentially made it a little easier. I say potentially because now you just have to capture capitals as opposed to either taking all cities or you could get domination in the case of Civ 4 and not have to go completely conquest. It depends to me on where the capital is situated and how much you have to go through to get to it.
I've avoided saying domination because it means different things in each game. But yes, in Civ 5, Belterry was made... I don't know if I'd go with that. I don't know if I would say that it was easier to attain because you don't have vassal state nonsense in Civ 5. And it's with one unit per tile, it takes longer, even if it's not necessarily any harder. Whereas in Civ 4, if you broke a sack and you weren't playing deity, then you could probably run through AI before it could recover. So that's a tough one. I wish Game of War is actually more difficult. But even then, how often do you see a Civ that's getting rolled so badly that it loses its capital, then go on to win? Maybe if you're talking about the final two Civs in the game and the human cheese balls, the AI capital or something on the other continent, and wins instantly, okay, fine. That's, that is what it is. But for the most part, Military is actually hardest in the base game of the possible victories.
I mean, you could also have it in Civ 5 that other Civs are taking the capitals, or one or both, and even though you don't have vassal states, depending upon the nature of the city-state, for example, and where they're situated, that can make the difference between, and I know that's a big could, but it could make the difference between, okay, perhaps, you know, I assist maybe with some naval bombardment, and or perhaps I launch some nukes across the map, and then a city-state that's nearby, I'm allied with them, and they've got some military units that can get there and move in for the final kill.
Moving on to the email, we're almost done here, almost done. Will they come out with an expansion to Civ 5 that changes gameplay elements or just more add-ons? I don't know where the appropriate venue for that. I certainly can't answer questions without getting myself in trouble, so I think I'll just skip on. If one of the other co-hosts wants to comment on that once I'm done with the email, that's fine, but I don't have anything there. I mean, an expansion, I would guess, would be something favorable just because... people would probably buy it, but I don't know if they're intending to do that or just more DLC. I don't know. Jason asks, you guys said that Civ 5 was released way too early, and as a result, quick fixes were made to fix the game, and that made it into something original developers just actually not intended to be. I don't know if I went that far, or if any of us did, because I don't know what the original developer and what intent was. But anyway, if they were given more time, what do you think Civ 5 would have been? And this is an interesting question. But, by more time, where do you start with this? I mean, do you start in the design phase such that the game would not only have had one unit per tile, but also other major changes? Or, would that be spent on making the gameplay run smoothly? Would it be spent on any number of things, potentially? And it's hard to guess what they would have used extra resources to do.
I feel like they would have used the resources to, give us some of the things that that only ended up coming out, in patch. stuff like...
Well, okay, yeah.
I can just read off, like, all the patch notes and be like, hey, you know, this is probably some things... I mean, most of those things should have probably been done before release. Of course, we've been complaining about the UI, but also, just the game randomly crashing. When there's, some memory leaks and, just general game balance, but I feel like I know most of the complaints have been about the AI, but, I feel that just getting the basics down in terms of not getting the game to crash, having a useful, working multiplayer, that sort of thing, that would be ideal. I mean, we've had so many, like, rule changes and, buildings have changed what they give you, like, at least, four or five times over the various patches. So I don't really, I'm not so worried about that because, that's something that could have been done with playtesting. not that they didn't playtest. there's just some basic things that they could have done in, like, a year. The year since they released it, that they've been releasing all these patches. Like, that could have been...
Yeah, and that's why I often joke that it was a beta, because it, after release, that we were all playing Civ 5's beta still, and because the kinds of things that you're seeing in the patch notes over the past year plus have been something that you would more traditionally see in a game pre-release. For example, patches that let an aspect of gameplay, a la multiplayer, function much better or really at all, with anywhere near the number of players intended to be in the game. That's something that you would not normally see being still in development in a release title. That would normally happen beforehand. And even now, it's probably difficult. I can't picture playing a game with like 10 people in Civ 5. They had a lot of time, so I don't know. I think you would have to start way, way, you know, when the game is being started, and perhaps manage the entire project a little bit better. I don't know that more time would necessarily have helped. I mean, it would have helped clean up the game a little bit, but I don't think we'd have seen, like, full-sale changes to make the game better just by giving them an extra year or two. I think we would have seen something very similar to this, just a bit more polished.
I think that Civ 5 would still be evolving officially, that is, patches for the games and downloadable content, but that it would be more polished like Civ 4 was the year after its release. I don't feel that Civ 5 cannot regain this lost ground, but that thing is now we're dealing with resolution to issues. We're dealing with, you know, as Phil was getting at, we're dealing with issues in a released game as opposed to issues in a game that hasn't been released yet. So it's going to take more time and effort to not only obtain that, but to also get people to either continue to play the game more or to even come back to the game. And they may still not be able to do that. On the previous question about expansions or just more add-ons, it was last August when we had episode 100, which was our first live broadcast, that 2K and Firaxis, it might even been, I think, a Firaxis representative specifically said that there will be expansions for the game. So I think it's just it's a matter of when as opposed to if. And then the question is, you know, I think that there will be an expansion, and they haven't said we're done with downloadable content yet, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's both. And I think that takes us to the end of Jason's email, which was very detailed, well thought out, a number of interesting questions, and, you know, some questions that we haven't addressed on this show before. And so with that, that takes us to whatever our next inquiry is that is right now only in the mind of Mackie.
Well, here over on, we open question threads on multiple Civ sites to get more questions in. So pulling from the one over at We Play Civ, Dale was asking, what does the panel think of the direction that the Civ franchise has or is taking, you know, with now with going into Civ World and this proposed Civ MMO, and is this good or bad, especially for the longtime diehard players? I know some of them will be completely turned off by the idea of an MMO, and I'm trying to figure out exactly how is that going to work as an MMO, because it's a persistent world. It's like living in a Civ game world, but what are they going to do, reset the game every so often, like with Civ Worlds, or...
I don't know. I would still like to see good core entries in the turn-based strategy genre that Civ is known and loved for, especially because new turn-based strategy games that are really good are rare, certainly. But I haven't tried, I guess, some of them, so I shouldn't say that. But you know, even if all the games I haven't tried turn out to be good, when you compare it to other genres, it's still you still have a lot of thinning there over the recent years, just because there aren't as many titles released. So I would not like to see the Civilization franchise get completely away from that. And if they have enough resources and manpower to expand into other game genres, and they can do that well, I mean, I don't know. I've heard Civ World isn't that great, but maybe Civ MMO could be. I don't know. Certainly, I didn't think a World of Warcraft would do well, and that's probably the most successful MMO ever. So if they pull it off, hey, more power to them. And I don't think that necessarily would hurt your hardcore diehard player. But a stoppage in what has made the series great at this point would hurt. And what has really been great about Civ is the strategic depth. You have so many options that you have from one game to another, and it's so rare that you'll get a game that plays out exactly the same as a game you've already played. I mean, I've played hundreds of Civ 4 games, and most of them are not anywhere near exactly like another game that I've played in the past, as you just have so many choices, starting from the beginning of the game and going on to just about the end, that can affect the outcome. And I think their ability to capture that is what's really defined the series as one of the greater strategy games. So I'd hate to see that be lost. And I mean, you really can't capture that in a Facebook game. Can you capture it in an MMO? Yeah, you probably could. I don't know how they'll do it. But as long as they still have that, and as long as they don't completely get away from turn-based, it could be, it could still be good.
You know, I feel a little similarly to when it was announced that Civilization was coming to the consoles. And by that, I don't mean, ooh, let's port this PC title onto the console like was done for Civilization 2, and even the original Civilization, and was not met with very good reception, because you're dealing with a different platform and trying to translate that one into the other, like a copy-paste is problematic and to be flawed from the outset.
User interface. Sorry. A little talk
Civ Rev does not have the depth of play that the PC-based Civilization games have, but it has a considerable extent of breadth. And if the platform can support that in some fashion, I mean, we know that with Civilization Revolution, that was the first Civ title that Sid Meier tackled specifically himself, that he led since the original Civilization, and there are definitely some reasonable comparisons between the two. Like Phil was saying, if it's bringing more people into the Civilization audience, then this is a good thing, because the companies that develop this are indeed companies, and it's about money. And we have seen how, as much as I hate to admit it, that popularity of Facebook games, for example, although, you know, the profitability of that, you know, whether it's a subscription model, in the case of Civ World, it's not, it's free to play, it's advertising driven. Is that going to continue to be like that while it's still in development? Is it going to go to a subscription model? Who knows? But if the MMO is successful to however we decide to measure success, then I think from an audience standpoint and then a financial standpoint, this will only be a good thing, so long as indeed the PC development continues. And there can be opportunities to try things that perhaps lend itself more either to the console-based or a massively multiplayer online-based system, that then based on that experience, good or bad, you could decide, maybe there's a way that we can bring this over to the PC platform, for example, as a very minor point that could have been tried on the PC platform but was tried on consoles first instead was, for example, in Civ Rev, the ability to capture great people, be able to settle them, and then you can up and move them and put them in another city so long as you don't expend them, but you're not able to do that in the PC-based games. With the massively multiplayer online game, though, it has not been confirmed any way officially that I've seen from 2K. The company that says that they're behind the development XL games posted an announcement back in August to say that this was the deal that we reached with 2K in May, which was take the Civilization property and turn it into an MMO. And they have stated that they're currently looking for programmers and developers and designers to actually help out with this. So even though an MMO is not going to appeal to me personally, perhaps there are those who play the MMO and then decide, this was fun. Perhaps I might be interested in trying it on a console, or perhaps I'd be interested in trying it on the PC. Like I know for myself as a PC gamer, I tried Civilization Revolution because I liked the game on the PC, but I wanted something that was portable. Perhaps people who play it as a massively multiplayer online game would think the same way. I like playing this online, but I would like to be able to take this with me so they go up and pick up Civilization Revolution.
Yeah, and if they did go, well, at least it's a separate company that would be developing the MMO, and it's not themselves doing it, because, like, it's an old example, but when Ultima Online came out, it kind of took away from the single-player games. because they saw how much money they could make off of it. They shifted all the stuff over there, and then the last single-player Ultimate came out really suffered from it. So I'm glad it's a separate company so we don't see Civ 6 suffering from them focusing on the cash cow MMO thing.
Because I know when they were developing Civ Rev, they had to drop the Wii port because they're trying to do it in-house between 2K and Firaxis, and said, we don't have enough people to do it. So now if you're, in terms of giving it to another developer, and a developer that actually has already developed an MMO called Arc Age, I'm not familiar with it, but they have that experience.
Yeah.
Whether that Arc Age is good or bad, and I wouldn't even begin to say, well, I mean, I could say it would be so ill-informed, it would be ridiculous. But even if it didn't work out, you could say, well, sometimes you learn more from your failures as opposed to your successes. So that way they've gone to somebody that has that specific experience. And then you're not dealing with taking your human resources and trying to have too many people working on things at the same time. Because Firaxis has already got people still working on Civ 5. They've got people working on Civ World. And maybe whatever a Firaxis next is, whether it's another Civ title or it's something completely different. At some point, if you're trying to please everybody, trying to do too many things in one company, you're not going to please anybody. So this diversification and this collaboration, like actually 2K did when they went to the mobile platform, when they put CivRev, you know, on mobile devices, it wasn't 2K that did that in-house. That was outsourced.
How was that? I've never tried CivRev, especially on the iPhone or iPad.
I did try that. It was okay.
The free version or the paid for version? Because I read that the free version was and remained quite buggy.
I think it was the free version. Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, the paid version was like probably like one of the most expensive, you know, iPhone games that you can buy on the App Store.
But it's kind of like with Steam, right? You need to be watching for those sales.
Yeah. I'm a little bit more optimistic, I guess, about their relationship with XL Games and. Because, I mean, I'll take that back. XL Games is a pretty new company, but I feel a little bit more optimistic about this.
One's from East Kitten. As someone who hasn't yet bought any downloadable content for Civ 5, I'd like to ask which DLC is the most interesting to play? Interesting in all caps. And it's like, oh, interesting. What a term that you can go so many ways with. Interesting is very subjective, but if I'm looking at downloadable content, for me, I think the most interesting to play is any number of the additional civilizations. I would recommend starting with, whether you want any future civilizations or not, start with the Mongolian civilization, because it's free. You get the fully functional civ and doesn't cost you a penny, just however many seconds, maybe a minute or whatever, depending upon your connection to download it. Otherwise, taking into account downloadable content, and specifically our discussion of civs, and we've discussed different DLC being released in episodes 113, 117, 127, and 136, I would recommend the Double Civilization and Scenario Pack of Spain and Inca from last December, which is $7.49 as of this recording on Steam, and the Civilization and Scenario Pack released in August 2011, which was Korea, specifically for the unique abilities, as well as in some cases the unique units and unique buildings that come with both of those paid-for downloadable content. I think you'll get the most versatility in most of your Civ 5 games from Spain, Inca, and Korea as opposed to some of the other downloadable content, although I'm pretty close out of Babylon there. But I would say, if I had to choose three, I would choose three. Spain and Inca and Korea paid version, but also grab yourself the free Mongolian Civ first to decide, is this actually worth paying for?
I don't have any DLC other than the free ones, so I can't help you there. Now, if it would just go on sale on Steam again like it was the other week when I missed it.
Yeah, I concur with Dan on the Korean Civ.
I
also think that it's one of the best things you can get on DLC. I mean, I wouldn't bother with any of the scenarios on DLC form, but yeah, any of the civs, especially Korea. Although, I feel like it's just the Korean unique ability that's the best. I mean, yeah, the unique units are pretty good too, but yeah, anyway. Korea.
Win. Yeah, not so much.
I'm just going to cheat just a little bit here because there's a related inquiry. I know it's choosing two, but anyway, some of the other ones were longer. It's also about downloadable content, so I thought, okay, let's combine it. He says, what do you think the next DLC will include in the way of flavor, like cultural civ, economic, etc., and giving reasons? Most DLC released to date has included, or has been, only been a civilization, and therefore I think the next downloadable content will also be a civilization. Of the 7 DLC civs released to date, only one has never been seen in one or more Civ games before, and that's Polynesia. So I think the next DLC we're going to see, just because we've already got Polynesia, it seems like it's time for another Civ that we haven't seen before. Canada! No, actually, I'm kidding. kidding.
Oh, no. It'll be the day. What, you don't think we're going to see Holy Rome again? No? God, that was terrible.
What would constitute the ideal special holiday mod for Civ? Asked Alexander from We Play Civ. This is sort of, I guess, on the same vein of what was missing from Civ 5. What would be my ideal special holiday mod in my ideal lovely world where Civ works? I would have my Civilization 4, and I would have... Well, actually, I like Civilization 4 pretty much the way it is. Maybe I could just, like, I don't know, have a train, like, snow, have snow on it. No. The special ideal holiday mod would be that one DLC, the Norwegians or the Danes or something. Yeah, I think it was a Viking. No, it wasn't the Viking. Oh shit. It was one of those Norwegian DLCs for Civilization 5, but I want that for Civ 4, so I can have like sea infantry on Civ 4. That's what I want.
You have a Vikings? What's wrong with the Vikings? Why you, you know, like the Vikings, Lisa?
I just want the ski infantry.
Elsa has those, like, every time anyone can use them.
Play a map where it's all mountains and snow and tundra.
You mean Canada? No, I'm just
kidding. Wow, that was just cool, like, ski infantry, and this is an actual thing. Like, people did fight on skis. This is so crazy. In, like, Finland and stuff. Obviously. Okay. Sorry, I had no idea this was a thing. I thought that, like, Firaxis just made it up.
Well, in 2008 Christmas special, we profiled for Civilization 3, the Christmas city set, so it didn't change the purpose or the function of the game. It just changed the appearance. You know, it's like when Civ fan sites in their forums, they change the smileys and they put the little Santa hats on. Just put Santa hats on all the units. That's good enough.
On the leaders.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't know if I want to
see Monty in a Santa hat.
Oh, no, that would be awesome.
I don't want to send
that guy off. I don't want to know.
Listen, as long as he's not just wearing the Santa hat, okay. But, you know,
I wanted to ask you how naughty I've been this year.
Well, you did swear earlier, so I think...
I'm sorry, Danta Claus.
Did you just call me Danta Claus?
Yes, you're Danta Claus, though.
Wow.
You dank forever.
If you wanted something more gameplay specific, I didn't actually look this up to see if it was happening with Civ 3, Civ 4, or even Civ 5. If you wanted something more cooperative, like when I see special holiday mod, I think of, okay, something that's primarily or entirely single player that modifies the game. If you wanted to modify, say, the gameplay, but be, you know, like a cooperative effort, you know, like in-house rules kind of a thing. I do remember the Christmas play-by-email games, which were gifting-based, which, you know, had... I think you would actually need to, you know, to... I mean, that was just forum-driven. It wasn't actually mod-specific. Like, nobody actually modified the game. But that could be kind of interesting as a atypical variant to fit the holiday season. But Santa hats are good enough for me, really. I'm easy to please.
He has basically an A through J list of how they might change the gameplay experience.
He
said, you know, the first suggestion was that the instant heal promotion would be removed.
Yeah, we talked about InstaHeal on episode 108.
Yeah, this is a huge, I don't know, this post has a bunch of parts in it, but some of the more interesting ones are, more power to range bombardment. I kind of like that idea, that's an interesting idea. But, I mean, ranged bombardment has a lot of power already, and this is the first iteration of SIP that's even had ranged bombardment. I say yeah, actually. I mean, that would be cool. I wouldn't say that I said it's, like, a huge problem right now, but come on, wouldn't it be funny? I don't know.
Let's make great scientists and research agreements stronger. Let's do it. It would be fun.
Yeah, no to the more power to range bombardment. No. No. We're good. Tied with that, since you brought that one up, Lisa, is the ability to destroy improvements with land, naval, and air units. I'm assuming when he says improvements, I interpret that as actually city improvements.
No, I interpret it as pile. You're bombarding a strategic resource away from the sea. That would be my take on it.
Oh, well, I have no problem with that. As long as the range isn't ridiculous.
Yeah, but you can make units a lot weaker by doing that. You sail a battleship up, shoot their iron or uranium. Yeah, we can make those giant death robots weaker. Or whatever other strategic resource, oil, you want. Shoot that down, and now all their stuff is junk, and you can just own them like crazy. And you can do that anyway with units, but making that much easier, I think it would be fine in multiplayer because people would actually protect their resources and would probably station units on them to defend them. But in single player, I could just picture Firaxis calling this an exploit and taking it back away.
What is this about wanting to bring back saltpeter? Did you not play Civ 3?
No.
This guy is obviously has forgotten or has not played Civ 3, because, oh, good God, you would get so far into the game, and then you would not have saltpeter, and you would be just, that would be the end of your game. I saw this happen in a play-by-email game, a diplomacy game type thing, and I was like, oh, we were all like, oh, crap.
It's nobody is saltpeter.
For the people who didn't...
But you could discover a new source.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have that mechanic in Civ 3.
Source is depleted. Yes. Wait, no.
I mean, it does say for early gun power units, so it wouldn't be like in Civ 3 where later on it was also for cavalry and things like that, but still...
Yeah, you know, I would be okay for an early gunpowder unit, like your first generation gunpowder unit, but then after that, no. Well, then it's similar to like when you find out, oh crap, I don't have any iron, but my neighbor next door does. I should go get some, or I should actually acquire that before they actually start making use of that. All right, let's go down the civil service path so my spearmen can now be pikemen, for example. Oh geez, they've got saltpeter and I don't. Well, I've got some long swordsmen here. For example, I better go in and get that resource from them, or even go in and pillage it if it's improved at least before they can make gunpowder units. Or if they do make gunpowder units, then they're now less effective. I did have the same knee-jerk reaction as Mackie when I first. I will admit.
All of us who played Civ 3, no.
That is a curse word in
pretty much.
In Civ. It's just like no.
Thumbs up supports gaining the ability to work like canals. That's fine. That's an issue with that one. Ability to destroy capital. That conflicts with victory conditions.
Yes.
Terraforming is interesting. The problem is terraforming doesn't change the fundamental balance of the game. For example, it would take so long to terraform junk land that the game's probably going to be decided one way or another before you could do it, and yes. A bad start for you.
We had that back in, what, Civ 2, that you could do some limited terraforming, but it was so far in the end of the tech tree.
Yeah.
It's not
you
useful.
You could do a lot, actually.
It's not like with Alpha Centauri, where like, you start from the beginning and have terraforming, and it has a lot of uses.
And this person's suggesting terraforming in the Renaissance era? No. No. I know we're about gameplay and not realism here, but I think gameplay and realism agree, no.
It would probably hurt realism more than gameplay. I mean, it would have an effect on gameplay, but it probably wouldn't be that critical. Yeah, I don't see how that's a good thing for the game, no matter how which approach you take in this case.
As for the ability to destroy city-state cities, as opposed to the capital thing, I'm okay with that, but I would then like to see a specific diplomatic penalty for actually doing that.
Yeah, like all the city-states now start hating you. You killed one of our friends.
Even more than just taking it, yeah, you've raised it. So not only did you capture the citizens effectively, but the game implies that you killed them.
No, that screws the game mechanics, because then you can't liberate and you can't reclaim capitals. I don't like the ability to raise capitals in Civ 5. I think it was a good move that they made so you couldn't do it. Oh, and by the way, no random events there, Marduk. No sneaking that in. No. Holding my finger up. No. Just no.
On the ability to destroy capital and city-state cities, I made the distinction between capital and city-state cities. No, destroying the capital, no, but the city-state cities, yes. I know you can't then liberate it, but that's, you know, okay, so you prevented somebody from being able to do that, so that should, there's a reason to go, you know, respond to that, since you're not going to be able to do that, and for the world to turn around and say, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, not just a penalty to the other city-states.
The city-state.
Okay, AI proper.
Diplo would be more interesting. You won a UN victory. Oh, wait, no, you can't. All the city-states were burned.
Just look at their will. They voted for me.
Yeah. I declare myself the winner because anyone who could have voted otherwise is gone. I think that's called Conquest.
Mm-hmm.
Does England's, and this kind of ties into our episode 136, does England's unique ability need buff? Plus two naval movement is quite weak and uninspiring when compared to other unique abilities. No.
No. The answer to this is play more archipelago maps.
That, and don't just look at a Civ's unique ability, whether it's England or otherwise. Take into account unique unit and unique building. Like when we rated unique abilities last time, we did it in a vacuum. Maybe we even said that. We're not taking into account that stuff. Are you kidding? The longbowmen? Come on. Any criticism you might have against naval units, the longbowmen. Oh, man.
Yes. Their unique ability doesn't need a buff because their unique unit is really, one of their unique is really, really good.
Yeah, attacking three hexes away? I mean, that's even before a unit, even if it's five, would have the chance to strike back probably before it could get hit again. Like, wow. I hate those things.
You hate them when they're not yours.
Yes, exactly. Oh, on the first one, talking about instant heal, honor other social policy given a new branch. We've got enough choice with social policies right now and trying to balance them, especially the game otherwise continues to be modified, sometimes minimally, sometimes significantly. I don't think another social branch is not only necessary, but actually not desirable.
I agree with you on that part.
I agree also. A lot of moving parts trying to balance that with other game changes.
Yeah, putting something else in the policy trees right now, which throw things off.
I guess the last one, AI should always pillage tile improvements whenever it has the opportunity to do so. Especially on harder difficulty levels, pillaging should be mandatory. What?
No.
Why should it be mandatory? It does not have the same, with the exception of strategic resources. I mean, that's significant. Perhaps the AI should look at that more when it has that opportunity to pillage strategic resources.
Yes. Okay.
And he suggests that, you know, certain AI personalities have a greater tendency to do that. I'm okay with that, too. But if an AI could, you know, take a city this turn, but, you know, it decides to pillage the farm instead, or it could kill a unit beside it, and it decides to, you know, pillage the trading post instead, no, it shouldn't be mandatory. That's short-term gain for longer-term pain, probably, or likely. No way.
You get mean for that to rhyme.
Yeah, it's Dan.
It doesn't even matter. You shouldn't do that because you can abuse it. It would make high, quote unquote, high difficulties easier. You're like, yeah, you don't attack me. Just move on to that tile and pillage it, and then I'll crush you in the flatlands and put a troll face on your empire as you die, because you don't have any military units. They were all killed attempting to pillage.
Lisa?
Yes.
I didn't intend for that to rhyme, but just for you in the future, I will make the time. Okay.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow. Great. He pulled attention to it. Now he's going to do it the rest of the podcast.
Speaking of troll things.
I'm not going to do this for the rest of the show. I've got nowhere else to go. Oh.
No. Oh, my God.
Pandora's box, Lisa. Pandora's box.
Let's just all do it for the rest of the show.
No. Oh, wait. Darn. I just... From Tremonti over at CFC. Here's a question that applies to both Civ 4 and Civ 5. Have you ever abandoned a game due to an overly generous reward from a goodie hut? For example, popping bronze working, getting a big fat cross copper on turn 1. No, but I have with a Barbarian Uprising event in Civ 4. That has happened. Or within 10 turns, anyway, for sure.
My answer is yes. I was trying out a rush and got bronze working right away. And I didn't want that, because it wasn't a realistic picture of how the rush would typically go. And just throwing this out there, but one of the 10 Challenger games from Hall of Fame Challenger 5 was won on a lucky hut pop. Just saying that shouldn't be there. I mean, ultimately, the guy who won would have won anyway, even if he finished second in that particular game. But he definitely won won that game on that hut outcome.
From Tremonti as well, who says, I'd like to request the catchy tune, The Santa Claus Rock, that was featured in the 2009 Christmas special. Now, we only featured part of it, but just for you, Tremonti, I found a copy of this song. So here is your request, Santa Claus Rock from Howard Perlman.
I learned this song at the old motel. Talk to me about this merry old soul. It has a beat that really pops. It's called Santa Claus Rock. It really was such a sight to see 2,000 elves dancing around that tree. I never saw so many kicking feet as they danced Santa Claus Rock. Then the most shocking thing I know, 9 frosty reindeers stole the show, and in the room started to snow as they danced Santa Claus Rock. Oh, Mrs. Claus, she stepped right in. This is how she stays fitting thin, with whirling moves and sudden stops. She danced Santa Claus Rock. Pretty girl, won't you dance with me all around the lighted Christmas tree as we make some history as we dance the Santa Claus Rock. Take a quick step to your left, twirl around and catch your breath. I push your partner to and fro as you dance the Santa Claus.
And we're back. So,
what? This is the rave cast? What? there's one over on a Civ Players. This guy's name is actually awesome, but he put an extra capital in there. He wanted to know how we all felt about the science in Civ 5. It's not based on populations, but off of citizens. So you can have two Pop 5 cities produce as much as one Pop 10 city. Trade-offs? Good thing? Bad thing?
I think I've heard this somewhere before.
Did Ashland get covered in that?
No, we addressed this a little bit in the last episode. A little bit. And due to rounding error, well, not really rounding error, but due to rounding, we could probably see differences in a pop 2 pop 5 versus a single pop 10. The thing about pop versus science is that you still want your science concentrated in large population cities with good multipliers, because otherwise you're going to have to pay for additional multipliers in more cities and just to get the same amount of science. Now, okay, eventually a 30-city empire with fully stacked happiness buildings, lots of resources, and all the city improvements is going to out-tech a smaller empire. But if you're talking about distribution early, you want your investments to give the most payback, which means you'd want to concentrate a little bit better than that. I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily a flawed mechanic per se. I don't like that so many things go through one mechanic, and that's your happiness. So many things go through that. Your production can be hampered by happiness. Your your city growth, therefore your economy is linked very, very, very strongly to happiness.
Your war is linked to happiness because if you're at 10 or lower, you're completely...
Yeah, I know they wanted to use it to avoid ICS, but I think by itself, it's a tough sell to balance that because it's an overriding factor in so many things.
Yeah, because when he mentioned the 2.5 cities, I started thinking about that. Well, you could spam out a bunch of cities, and I went, wait, no, the happiness is going to kill you.
The thing is, it's the multipliers from those city improvements. Like, for example, I mean, yes, it's in the ancient era, you've got libraries, you got +1 science for each 2 population from libraries. But then if you look in the classical age, and specifically the National College, National Wonder, that's going to give you +3 science, but also +50% science. So since you already have to have the library anyway, which is +1 science from 2 population, the larger the population you're getting here, the more base science you're going to have, and then that modifier is going to give you even more science. And then once you hit medieval and education, you've got +33% science generation, but also 2 great scientist, great person points that not only increase your base science production, but they also turn around and contribute towards a generation of great people, a la great scientists, which you could use for an instant technology the same turn. But I don't think this is a flawed mechanic either. He also had a question where he says, I would like to hear the trade-offs between the two and whether or not the production strategy is the only way to go with medium-sized cities in Civ 5. And I tried to extrapolate from what he was saying what specific production strategy he's referring to. Does someone know what he's referring to specifically? I just kind of took that as a general comment, but it sounds like he's talking about something specifically.
Well, I think he's just talking about the fact that production in Civ 5 tends to be so slow that it tends to be most advantageous to convert your mid-sized cities to production. I haven't really played that game. Yeah, I haven't really played that way. Yes, a lot of your mid-sized cities, well, most a lot of your cities, period, end up going towards production just because you need that to produce whatever. Like if you're trying to produce units. You know, I usually end up having most of my cities producing units. But on the other hand, if you're, you know, pursuing something else, I don't see a problem with trying to convert a mid-sized city to gold, for example. I don't think that a production is really the only viable choice that you have. I mean, with the gold multipliers, you can have a pretty nice, gold city, commerce city, with the multipliers that are provided, you know, until Renaissance. And still be okay.
Yeah, it's not like Civilization 4 and Civilization 5. You have the ability to buy buildings and units with gold from the outset. So if you're looking at your available terrain for settling and you're thinking, man, I'm not going to be able to do much of production in the early part, then you could focus on gold, for example. And you could do that not even so much necessarily for trading posts, but earlier in the game we've talked about how the AI loves to get your luxury resources, and depending upon your game speed, it could be 200 gold or 250 gold, and then you could turn around and say, in an extreme situation, especially early on, translate that into some archers, and a couple of warriors, and then later on, you could upgrade those warriors with some additional gold to swordsmen, which is cheaper than buying a swordsman outright. So, with the versatility of gold, if you actually then thought, this city really isn't going to even be a production powerhouse until I actually get those production buildings built in there, but it's going to take forever in order to build them or too long to build them, save up some gold and buy it in an extreme circumstance. I don't think, even though base production is an issue in Civ 5, thanks to the versatility of gold, for better or worse, I don't think it's that big of an issue. Also look at the available resources around you, and then think about the technologies that would enable you to improve your base production, especially like early on in the game. Is there stone or marble nearby? Go get yourself stoneworks. Or you settle a city on the river, get yourself a water mill. You have horses, sheep, cattle, stable, and then by the time you get to medieval, you can get +1 production from iron tiles worked in a city and +15% production of land units for forge, whether that's to go and actually declare war on someone, to continue a war that you started earlier on someone, or even to be able to defend yourself in a particular moment.
Ironworks, rush. No, actually, production isn't really that bad scaling-wise. It was pretty bad on release, but they've kind of... It's not perfect, but it's... if you compare pacing previous games, what makes the game feel slow is that you just wait so long for things to happen because the game runs slowly. But when it comes to production pacing, I don't see that that's particularly broken right now. I mean, it might need a little tweak, maybe, but it's not a critical element any longer when you're comparing production to other things. And it necessarily had to be scaled back because of one unit per tile. But it's really not hurting the game at this point, I don't feel.
I did want to address a question on We Play Civ by E_T. He asked about the resurgence of, okay, he says, how about the resurgence of Civ 4? A call to arms is just one item. In light of Civ 5's disappointments or something along that line. And I think, the people on this panel are of a range of opinions on the success or disappointment of Civ 4. I actually don't think Civ 5 is, that terrible, but at the same time, during this whole period where there's been, new patches every couple of months that change the game altogether, I just kind of, decide to sit that one out for a little while. I think that might be, that's definitely the reason why I've for the most part sat out of Civ 5 and gone back to Civ 4. I also just like the fact that, Civ 4 tends to be a harder game. By the way, I wanted to point out that, A Call to Arms, what he pointed out is a large game that's going on in the We Play Civ community. And it's like a team game with, I don't know, it really sounds like kind of like a Hall of Fame challenge, but, on We Play Civ. There's a discussion going on. I don't know if it's underway yet. It is. It's definitely underway. It's like a 41-page thread, so yeah, I hope so. Who else? Well, Phil, you don't really play Civ 5 that much either. I mean, you've gone back to Civ 4. I mean, I honestly...
For the most part, I have, I don't know if I'm at 200 hours. I don't think so. I'm over 100 hours on Civ 5, and that's just with release. So when you count my beta time, I'm probably closer to 200 or 300. So I've played Civ 5 a fair amount. You have to remember my play speed as well. So I get through a lot of games like that. But no, I've gotten away from Civ 5 a bit because of the way it runs, and that's a bit of a put-off for me. But I would just like to point out, like, looking at Civ Fanatics right now, it's like 140 U.S. East. And Civ 5 general discussions is 60 viewing on Civ Fanatics, and Civ 4 only is 24. But strategy and tips are even at 46. Civ 4's creation and customation has like more than double what Civ 5 has. So, the Civ 4 community is still very active. Certainly on the forums right now, there are many people reading, on Civ Fanatics anyway. There's many people reading about Civ 4's 5, actually more than that if you count the modding. And of course, part of that is probably just because modding in Civ 4 is more well developed. But even so, you have quite a few people still very active in the Civ 4 community as well. I don't know. I think Civ 4 is, it has a little bit more depth. You have like a little bit more in terms of your strategic options, different ways you can play a game. There's a little bit less that you can do that's canned. That's not really fair to Civ 5 because Civ 4 Vanilla is a lot more canned than Beyond the Sword is. So Beyond the Sword changed the balance of quite a few things. But it's also just a more polished game, and I get tired of playing something that's quite honestly, I feel like should still be in beta with the amount of time you have to wait between turns, the questionable interface, questionable balance, research agreements, and great scientists both being ridiculous, especially research agreements. Great scientists are pretty interesting too, but if there's one thing I hate in the Civ franchise, it's the presence of tech trades and research agreements. So I don't know.
Well, I feel like most of the people that are in multiplayer haven't really, bothered with Civ 5. I mean, they've given it a try, but, just decided to kind of go back to Civilization 4. I think as time goes on, I don't really see that many people that are playing Civ 4 now switching back over to Civ 5 because I feel like most people have actually tried it and, you know, decided it wasn't for them. So, I mean, I guess the question is, you know, do we have, has, like, Firaxis just, like, lost those people until, you know, Civ 6 comes out or, you know, whatever next Civ iteration that is? Or, you know, is Civ 4 going to be, like, the real, the real last Civ and, you know,
no way.
There's going to be, like, a population. No, you know what I'm saying, though? Like, you know, there's going to be, I mean, there's still people playing Civ 1 now, but I feel like, you know, maybe 5-10 years from now, there's still going to be people playing Civ 4, and, you know, they'll be fine with it, you know? I don't know if I'll be one of them, but I feel like, you know, I mean, and that goes back to another question that was on We Play Civ. You know, Newgog asked, you know, which version of Civ, you know, do you think is the best iteration? And I think a lot of those people would say Civ 4, and you know, that's just one of the reasons why they've basically lost customers until Civ 6.
A lot of people do like Civ 5, though.
Why should they? I'm not saying that they should. I mean, I don't either. But, I mean, at the same time, like, would people really, you know, keep on playing Civ 4 until the next one comes out? I don't know. I mean,
there are still people playing Civ 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I saw this best iteration question, you can call it a cop-out or not, but I'm going to exclude Civ 5 from this consideration because it's still in official development. So if I look at the other...
it's true.
Still in beta.
It's not like Civ 4 where we've had all the expansions come out and it's had all of these, you know, time to polish it even more to where we have gotten to where we love Civ 4 so much. 5 hasn't had that chance yet.
I honestly do think that even at the end of 5, I think I'll probably still say Civ 4 and then probably Civ 5 second after that, but certainly for right now, the best iteration of Civ for me is Civilization.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I think we've already, and as for the and why, I think we've already discussed that actually in the past and actually already on this special again for that matter. And I think you also answered another question also with regards to multiplayer. Rob's question about will the eventual addition of Pit Boss and hopefully full play by email support to Civ 5 finally see it usurp the MP crown from Civ 4?
I doubt it.
No, the answer to that is no. And part of that has to do with not only because of how well entrenched Civilization 4 is in the community due to the familiarity and networking and existing customization, including that mod that I'm forgetting the name of from Civ players that they're asked that the participants now have to have that was really expensive based on the Civ 4 expansion Beyond the Sword. There's that, but then there's also the frustration with Civ 5, especially on the multiplayer front, where the multiplayer efforts that we have seen to this point have been minimal. Yes, the next patch is to be multiplayer focused, so to actually go with Bantams, who wants to think, you know, what's in the next patch and will it be awesome? Well, it's going to focus on the stability of multiplayer, so I think what it's going to include is mostly multiplayer, maybe a few bug fixes and cosmetic things for other things. Whether or not it will be awesome will remain to be seen from both gameplay experience and opinion. But I don't think Civ 4, in terms of being the MP crown in the Civ community, is going to go away anytime soon. I think the next contender for that will be a Civilization 6, if it ever materializes.
Oh, by the way, the mod that you were talking about in Civ players was Beyond the Game.
That actually just leaves us with one inquiry left from Myth Dragon. What's the one thing you would fix about Civ 5 right away if you had the chance? And it has to be a specific thing, not just multiplayer, although multiplayer now sequential in turn so that combat isn't screwy, quote-unquote, would be specific enough. You know, I'm tempted to say to add actually speed options to the turn timer in multiplayer, but seeing as how single player is the dominant basis for play, and this would also affect MP, decrease the processing time between turns. So we've already talked about that, so that was easy.
Yes, I agree. And not just that, but also the processing time during turns. It's ludicrous. It's the processing, just, that's my answer, the processing time. This is a turn-based strategy game. Yes, you have 3D rendered graphics, but so do pretty much every other new game out there, or so does pretty much every new game out there. It's ridiculous that in a turn-based strategy game, with animations turned off, I can give orders to units faster than the game can process them. You know, what is it calculating during my turn that I can actually outplay the interface with a graphics card that's stronger than what the game is says for its recommended, not its minimum, its recommended specifications. Between that and the slow turn time, I think this is the source of many people's complaints with pacing. It's just ridiculous how slowly this game plays. And it is a big turnoff, not just to me, but to a lot of people I've spoken with over the time since Civ 5 has been released. And it's probably, in my opinion, the biggest priority to fix if you're going to fix one thing in Civ 5. Most frustrating aspect.
Second most frustrating. Oos.
I would have think for those listening and wondering.
Yeah, it's a running joke on the Saturday night thing. Because as often as when we're playing Civ 5, even if there's just like three of us playing and, oops, out of sync. 20 minutes later, oops, out of sync. I'm exaggerating. It's not quite so often. But it's at least three or four times in a game that lasts about that many hours.
Now, Civ 5 does handle out of sync better than Civ 4 did. But
this is true.
But not that issue.
But out of sync came up in Civ 4 maybe once in a blue moon, whereas this is happening every game in Civ 5.
Anecdotally, typically with more than two players.
Mm-hmm.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at ThePolyCast or email us at ThePolyCast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
On our Ustream chat, which powers our live stream, which we record every 2 weeks on Saturdays at noon Eastern. I don't think all season we mentioned that verbally. Hardly mentioned verbally except for the last episode, but please rate us on iTunes. Thanks to Bantams, Bam Bam, Canuck Soldier, Sif, Colonel, Mustard, Ifgree, Coder 3, Imagine, M. Lucas Smith, ORNV, Phenom 2, Sirius 77, Skew Q, and my favorite, Sheldon Cooper, as registered users on Ustream who are actually in our Ustream crowd. And for this Christmas special, to both Imagine and ZX0X as registered users for listening, as well as the few guests that we have had over the past couple of hours.
You said Zed.
Yes, I did. I am Canadian and proud of it. Yes, Polycast has been renewed for Season 6. Podcast, Revcast, and Turncast are also set to return in 2012 as well. 13 episodes for Turncast beginning in January. Revcast will begin in February for 6 episodes, and Modcast is to return after the release of Civilization V's DLL, which should be sometime in 2012, it seems. So, this has been the 2011 Polycast Christmas Special. I'm Dan Hugh, rocking around the Civin PC with Makalua.
Oh, who is just going to sit here and just, you know, facepalm while Dan makes really bad pun things.
Otherwise known as business as usual. The me and team.
Tis the season for giving. Lots and lots of military units in your territory.
And Q&L.
Bye, all.
Yeah, the militaristic were eliminated from that consideration. Yes, thanks, antivirus software. Appreciate that.
Yeah, okay, sorry. I thought it just went silent here, and I was kind of frightened. But,
No. See, a woman was talking, so we were all being very quiet.
It's not good to talk behind his back, you know?
Yeah, you should talk in front of his back if you're going to talk about him.
In front of his back. That's one you don't hear usually. That's interesting.
Rocky speak.
I'm going to steal that and not credit you in real life.
Lisa is also on the chat. And yes, Lisa, I did notice you earlier saying no Star Trek. And you see, have I mentioned Star Trek since then? Except for mentioning...
You mentioned it right now.
does not count, okay?
Yes, it does.
No, 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 I'm afraid it does not. So,
hi.
Now go ahead, Lisa. Go ahead, Lisa.
Wait, what?
I was saying go ahead, Lisa.
I just wanted to say hi to Fivor, but...
Hi.
Oh, that's not allowed. But no.
Okay.
So we're just waiting to hear from Mackie, as it were, I think.
There we have
oh,
it.
Oh, hi!
You know the backup recording got that, right?
Don't care. Too early.
That was precious.
It'll make a nice part of the best of Mackie.
I don't think it seems to stop you very much. I have to yell at you and take away your poutine.
Well, okay. Are we done with Denmark? Are we going to move on to forum talk?
I was having a respectful silence for the loss of poutine, thank you. First from a Mark Lindstrom.
So this email is from Mark... it's from Mark Lindstrom. He just said that.
Where is this from again? I didn't quite get that.
Anyway, I'll talk
to you. Twice the value or more, depending on the exchange. Oh, sorry.
So maybe that takes us to whatever our next topic is. Mackie?
Topics? I don't know. You pick.
Do you want to choose a topic now, Mackie?
Quit making me choose things. I need more caffeine for that.
You can defer to me again or to somebody else if you like.
Somebody other than Dan gets to pick.
You make it sound like it's such an honor now that you're not doing it.
That's the best way to go about it. Hey, if you're trying to sell something, don't sell it. It's a bad thing.
I think ask you somebody to be your bud.
Like, I am finding that the ability to... wow, that actor is amazing. I don't know if that's... I mean, I love myself in stereo, but... I think that's from you there, John.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, give me a second.
Okay. And that's where we leaked in post-production. I think we've hydroed that plant. I attempted a segue. I guess then that takes us a brief dip into Civilization 4 waters. Lisa?
Sorry, I was just on mute. I just started speaking. And it was really good what I was saying. But
she pulled at me.
Yeah, it was really good what you were saying. So you say...
No, I would say, well, that's really... That's a great segue, Dad.
Anyway, we're actually getting a call. Or we were getting a call right now. I'm going to have to investigate that in a moment, which is great because that means I'll stop talking. But...
So, Fern.
I had originally in the chat that you were going to introduce that call. I kind of co-opted that. Whoops, my bad.
Yeah, I noted that, but I didn't care.
You wanted to introduce the next one, maybe?
Oh, I see how it is. Trying to throw me off here. Oh, really? The Civ 5... I didn't even read this. Let's see. For mine.
So much for your preparedness, Phil.
I'm clairvoyant. I don't need to prepare.
Recorded December 10th, 2011. Civilization 4, 5, and World Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Brittlestar, did you get what you want? Clips, copyright Brittlestar. Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You, Clips, copyright Columbia. Elton John, Step Into Christmas, Clips, copyright MCA. Howard Perlman, Santa Claus Rock, copyright Howard Perlman. Chris Rea, Driving Home for Christmas, Clips, copyright Magnet. And Ruby Summer, Darling One, Merry Christmas, Clips, copyright Ruby Summer.
It is very shiny.
And I promise not to be whiny. help you now, and now
I thought you also promised not to be rhyming.
Everything is dependent on timing. Okay, now.
That's not even a word.
Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.